This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good afternoon. Truth be told, Sue knows this. I actually started to talk without my microphone on. Usually you have to have the microphone on. But I guess I didn't press that button. Hi, Sue Thomas. How are you?
Hi, fine. Thank you.
It is a little rainy, a little cloudy out there today, but I still think by next week it's going to be hot and steamy and summer is going to kick in. You know, we've talked about the time moving fast many, many different occasions here on this show, but I'm still, and maybe it was because I took this vacation earlier, it's almost June.
Yeah.
That's like mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I understand that. And I have yet to be in the pool since it's, 70 degrees for a high and rainy every other day. But when I do that, then I'll feel like summer has kicked in and it's already June. I don't know.
I think you're going to feel that way this weekend. We're going to get into the upper 70s. And if you get a little dew point, I'm a dew point guy, Sue. Get a little dew point raised It's going to feel a little bit more like you can be in the pool. Because look, if I've told people this before and they think I'm crazy, but when I go to Vegas and let's say it's 90 degrees, let's say it's 95 degrees. If you get in the pool and you get out, you're cold because the dew point, it's so dry. It is.
Yeah, it's a desert. It is the desert.
But so that humidity, and you can feel the difference. Like compare fall and spring to what we have. You could still have a temperature of 80 degrees or maybe even 85, but if the dew point's sitting in the 50s the low 60s, it's super comfortable. The opposite obviously is true when the dew point is in the 70s. And by the way, for those people out there listening and you say, what's that dew point? I don't know. I just know that I like the number.
It's related to humidity.
Yes, it is. Well, we have a big show. Not that we don't have a big show all the time, but we do have a big show this afternoon. We have Johanna Brickman coming up. She wrote for the Free Press about the situation at Harvard. And I noticed this piece last week, and she's been nice enough to come on here with us this afternoon. We have Mr. Scott Jennings coming up in the next hour. You know, I mentioned this. He sent me this piece, and he's getting a lot of coverage nationally. And there was, let me see if I can get the outlet, Mishpacha Jewish Family Weekly. Never heard about it before, right?
Wow.
I was unfamiliar. But the headline was Taking Offense, CNN, Scott Jennings is the personal voice for the unheard masses. So when he texted me this, I said, can the personal voice for the unheard masses join us on Thursday afternoon? And he is coming up. But I read the piece, and it's such a great profile. I'll put this up on the X, formerly Twitter, in the next hour, because Scott and I will be talking about it just a little bit. But really, it runs through a lot of his history as well. I've shared some of this because, as you know, I started listening to him on the radio, unbeknownst to me that it was the same guy necessarily that started to be on CNN. And then our mutual friend Joe Arnold brought us together. But it really is. It's a great profile. And they've done a couple of profiles out there in some publications. But I think if you're, and we've got a lot of people out there, I saw it in person on Sunday with people stopping Jennings wanting to take pictures. A lot of people are fans, and I'll guide you into this because it's outstanding. And I think that you'll really love the piece, and we'll talk to him about it in the next hour. I love my friend Dwayne Patterson, too. He writes at hotair.com. We're going to cover with Jennings and with Patterson and with even Bob Bonder some of the things relating to the Big Beautiful Bill. Look, you have a lot of people, even Josh Hawley on the Senate side, that are concerned about the level of spending. They want to make some changes. But the goal here is to get to the president's desk by July 4th. You know, I have to say this sometimes, too, because I don't love all this stuff. But I've also been a guy that has been preaching on the radio for several decades about the only way you can stop this freight train is by addressing the entitlements. And nobody ever wants to talk about that, because if you're a politician, you can't dare say we're going to look at Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, because if you do, someone's going to take out an ad against you, or you're going to be primaried. So believe me, the people in Washington, not all of them, I'll be very curious to see what Bob Bonder says, because Bob's very fiscal conservative, but they're smart enough to know that the path to reducing the debt in this country has to eventually go through the entitlement programs. That's not very popular, though, and it's really...
No, but they're huge money sucks.
A lot of money. But the other thing about this is that's important is they can't touch a lot of the discretionary spending, some of this stuff that is wasteful. Sorry about it. Here, I got my phone on again. That's usually something I don't do. But that's because they're doing the reconciliation process. So there's a lot of things that are technicalities in all this. You know, I've even said this about the tariffs before. I don't understand everything that is going on with the tariffs. I don't think I approve of everything that's going on with the tariffs. But the first thing that I notice is Trump's doing something with the tariffs. Everybody panics. I was talking to a friend about this today who's been looking at his 401k, and he was screaming at me a couple of weeks ago. Why did they do that? I'm like, hey, let's give it a little time. Well, the market's been back up, and there's negotiation on the tariffs. So I think that that's something that's important to keep in mind. I unfortunately want to talk a little bit here about crime in St. Louis, because here we have a story in our local paper today, Sue, and I'll wind this into some interesting Jake Tapper audio, even though I think that if there is a hall of fame of media hypocrites in this country, if we should have that. You know what? Yeah. We should develop that, Sue.
I should invest in that, right?
It is a large group. I think that Jake Tapper would be at the top of that list, no doubt, especially considering what he's doing right now with this book. However, every time I hear him talk, something new comes out, and there's an interesting revelation and an observation that he makes, and I'll share the audio here in a couple of seconds, and you're going to say, oh, yeah, well, you know what? A lot of us have thought the same thing since Mike Brown in particular. But let me focus on what happened in this story that came out today. It says, this is in our local paper, the city rebounded from a pandemic spike in homicides, but still had the highest murder rate in the country, according to an analysis published Thursday, and they have to put this by a conservative think tank. You know, when they go to Ness Sandoval over at SLU, they don't say a liberal professor at a liberal university, but of course they have to do it here. So maybe I should be impressed that they even published the story, but it says the average homicide rate remained well above most of the nation's largest cities during a national rise in killings in 20 and 21, according to, this is Robert Van Bruggen, who's at the Manhattan Institute. And when the murder rates began to drop across the country, St. Louis's did too, but still in 2022 and in 2023, we had the highest rate in the country. So you had, we're coming off a mayor who, and you know, I always like to point toward the previous mayor before Tish, too, because I was so disappointed in Lia Cruz, and her husband was a victim of murder many years ago, and she showed no intestinal fortitude whatsoever, backing the police, trying to focus on crime. So I can criticize Tish and her band of progressives, but let's face it, some of this was certainly in the aftermath of when Lida Cruzan was the mayor of St. Louis. So they do point out this, that, you know, officials have touted steep reductions in homicide and crime since then, but it's still a problem, and it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed in the form, Sue, this is crazy, I know, in more policemen. And once again,
thank you.
Right, but see, what happens with that, and again, I'm not tagging Kara with this, because I think Kara Spencer is doing a pretty good job right now, considering what's on her plate with the tornado, but then that sort of delays any conversation that should be had about the cops.
Yep.
Now, we'll have more of those conversations tomorrow on the Reardon Roundtable. Jane will be back tomorrow. John Gaskin's on the panel, our friend Gene Evans as well. We got all the regular stuff tomorrow as well. But I thought that this was kind of sad. And, you know, I guess they have the police chief saying that he doesn't like to compare murder or crime rates between cities because each area deals with its own set of obstacles.
Oh,
poverty rates, population changes, access to guns, education rates, gang violence. Some of that might be true. But let's face it, the numbers are the numbers. And if you take the numbers out of it, you can just say, look, the perception of our city, let's go beyond what people might think in Louisville or in Nashville or in, you know, Indianapolis. Let's just talk about the people in West St. Louis County or in North St. Louis County or in South St. Louis County. When they hear numbers like this and we hear about the crime, we know what happened in Holly Hills a couple of weekends ago. We need more cops.
Yes.
And why people aren't, you know, at the Board of Aldermen screaming at the top of their lungs. When Elliot Davis came on a couple of nights ago, and I don't know that handing a stipend to tornado victims is really the correct answer, because how do you know that that's going to help them? But we do have this big pot of money that we could use, and we can use it to make the city safer and better. And we seem completely unwilling, not only unwilling to do that, but unwilling to have a conversation about that.
Which is outrageous. Here's what I want: a police chief that will say, you know what, I own it. We're going to take this on. We do have a crime problem. Instead of constantly ducking it, well, hey, we can't compare it to this. You can't compare it. Enough.
You're
we have
absolutely
a problem.
Right.
Let's address it. Here's how we're going to do it. The end.
That's why I said, you remember that was that Monday after what happened Sunday night in Holly Hills. That was, what, 2 weeks ago? And I said, Kara should be out there. I got to be more respectful. I should say Mayor Spencer at this point. Mm-hmm. Mayor Spencer should be out there with the police chief. And, you know, maybe that's just, people are going to say, oh, that's just blah, blah, blah. But at least show people that you care about these things.
Yes.
And whenever things get hot, it seems that Robert Tracy, we've tried to get him on the air.
Oh,
basically,
yeah.
I've told Fred, I said, look, let's invite. And they have this, you know, flack over there that's like 20 years old or something like that. And they always put us in touch with him. And he's the guy that does news conferences. I don't know outside, maybe this is an interview. I think it's a one-on-one that the Post did. But when is, you know, Robert Tracy done a news conference where he's, maybe he has, maybe I've missed it, but where he's actually dealt with some hard questions about what he's doing. Now, he was hamstrung a little bit, certainly by Tish and the gang, but let's show some interest in making the city safer. All right, so let me segue from that. I don't think it's an awful segue, because when you hear what Jake Tapper had to say, every once in a while I'll hear things, and you know, a lot of this stuff about the book has been shocking, but a lot of it has not been shocking, because we know, we've seen this with our own eyes, what's happened to Joe Biden. So when you hear these little nuggets that are leaking out, like the cabinet really wasn't seen. I think one of the most stunning figures, or not figures, but little factoids, is that essentially the chief of staff was Hunter Biden. That's shocking
insane.
To me. It is insane. And it's not hardly getting any attention. It's just like the cancer diagnosis, right? Nobody is focusing on that, even though it's so obvious to people. And it's obvious to even people on the left, because I've heard some people express this, that you don't all of a sudden just magically get stage 4 cancer. So people want to say, oh, well, that's, you know, not an important issue. Well, it's part of the cover-up. It really is. But let me play this, because I think you'll find this very fascinating from Jake Tapper. This is on, it's on a podcast. I can't remember which one. I can cross-reference here in a second.
I went on a left-leaning podcast that shall remain nameless. And we were talking about my kids, because I think they were both people without kids. And they asked me about my son, and I said he was, you know, he's a football player, and he wants to be a policeman. And their joke was about my 15-year-old son, oh, how does he feel about minorities? Like, the idea that he wants to be a policeman, therefore he's racist, my son. And, like, you know, that was the big laugh, and then I got dragged in the comments and all that stuff. And I thought to myself, this is why you to losing elections.
100%.
Okay, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
But let me just say, who is that guy sharing that story? Why don't you share that story when you were race baiting on CNN every time something happened? I'd love to go back. Now, this may have happened more recently with his son, but I'd love to go back and find out what, you know, he said about George Floyd. We're coming off an anniversary of 5 years of George Floyd, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. Take 10 minutes to watch The Fall of Minneapolis, and you can do it for free. Liz Collins' great documentary. If you watch the first 10 or 15 minutes, you will see things, and you should share things with your friends that you've never seen before in the national media. And even though those things are out there, you know, from the moments in the convenience store, it's sort of like the gentle giant here in St. Louis and what we saw on the video. People are in denial about that because they don't care about that. They don't want to hear about the truth of what happened. They just want to make it about race and about bad cops. And of course there's bad cops out there. There are bad people in everything. And I think, and I've said this even this week, that some of the things that happened in the past, I'd say even through the 90s, with I've used the serial killers as an example. You know, there's a common link between someone like Jeffrey Dahmer and John Gacy and this guy on Long Island, because in those instances when these women were disappearing or when these boys were disappearing, the cops were like, oh, that's a gay dude. We don't care, right? They didn't treat the people who were dying really as victims. In the situation in New York, it was a bunch of, you know, sex workers. So I'm like, okay, who cares? You know, that might be minimizing it a little bit. I'm not saying that some cops didn't try to do their job, but the focus wasn't quite on where it should be. That's changed now, I think, because of the era of, look, I'll give social media a lot of credit. There are things that are exposed on social media that are never exposed or may not have been exposed in legacy media. Here's one more cut from Tapper here.
Like my football playing son, who has no political views. He's 15. He thinks about World War II and gaming and playing linebacker. That's his world. You're deciding he's a racist because he wants to be a cop. And why does he want to be a cop? He wants to be a cop because he wants to help people. You know, and he thinks that's the best way he can help people. And that's how the Democratic Party talks to men, not just white men, but men. And I mean, I get the idea that they thought Tim Walz could what's the term he used? Code switch or something? He thought that he could translate the Democratic Party values because he hunts and fishes and owns a gun and was in the army and drinks a beer. I mean, at least there was an attempt, but I find it just insane.
Who is that guy? Because think about it. Is that the real Jake Tapper? Or is the real Jake Tapper the guy who never wanted to track down some of these stories? I don't really know this point.
His answer, of course, in the Megyn Kelly the podcast was, well, this is what the Democrats, the leaders, were telling us.
Yeah.
So we did not doubt it. We just thought, well, this must be true. And I'm thinking, what? You're in the media, right? You are to question everything.
Yeah, that's part of their job, and they're not doing their job. Now, let me take this into one different category here, because I feel like I'm setting myself up, and I think a lot of people might be setting themselves up again for disappointment on the NPR front. I have no question in my mind that National Public Radio and PBS should not get a penny, we're not making pennies anymore, a nickel of our taxpayer dollar. If they're so good, and in some cases they are. I've watched documentaries that have been pretty interesting on PBS. I can't say anything about NPR outside of Jason Rosenbaum, who's a reporter here in St. Louis, and I've always found his work to be really good. I'm sure Jason's not real thrilled that I'm out there on the X saying defund the living crap out of them. But this is an organization, okay? When the Hunter Biden story was going on, here's the headline. The New York Post, remember, does this story, and they put a little asterisk on their Twitter feed. This is in October of 2020. That says, we don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories, and we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' time on stories that are pure distractions. That's a quote from Terrence Samuels, who's NPR's, or at least was, NPR's managing editor for news, and that was referencing the New York Post Hunter Biden story. So the tweet said, you know, a bunch of crap, like we're not even going to pay attention. And this guy's quote comes out. It's outrageous. So you also have to remember this, that, you know, a lot of this came out with Yuri Berliner, who did that piece. He was an insider at NPR. He finally felt like he had to say something. An NPR editor found that registered Democrats outnumbered Republicans 87-0 in the newsroom's editorial positions. And rest assured, people, this is not just NPR, all right? It's a little different in local media, not the Post, but in local television newsrooms, I would argue, and certainly I would say over on KMOX, there's a lot more moderate ground, a lot more. There's a lot lefty nonsense too, but a lot more moderate ground. NPR's president and CEO Catherine Marr admitted that she regards truth as a harmful distraction from NPR's objectives. To illustrate its partisan capture, NPR management asked its editors to avoid the term biological sex when discussing transgender issues. All of this is documented. This isn't just pulled out of thin air. NPR has run stories defending looting and suggesting that crime fears are racist, and has described its diversity, equity, and inclusion practices as inseparable from its content. NPR refused to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story, calling it a waste of time and a distraction. I just highlighted that. They repeatedly insisted COVID-19 did not originate in a lab and refused to explore the theory. I am of the strong opinion, and we're going to explore this tomorrow, that David Zweig's book, An Abundance of Caution, is just as important, if not more important, than the Tapper Alex Thompson book, because so many of these kids in this country were devastated by this. And there's more and more information about the COVID vaccine, where Ron Johnson from Wisconsin has highlighted some of these things. All of these things that they did. The FBI, CIA, and Department of Energy have all deemed the lab leak theory the likely cause at this point, of course. They ran, I missed this one. I'll close with this because this is so good. NPR ran a Valentine's Day feature around, quote, queer animals, in which it suggested that the make-believe clownfish in Finding Nemo would have been better off as a female, and that banana slugs are hermaphrodites, and that some deer are non-binary. I mean, again, this isn't make-believe stuff. The make-believe stuff is all the stuff that you hear on NPR and PBS and ABC and NBC. The list goes on and on and on and on. Joanna Berkman is going to join us next week and talk about the nonsense going on at Harvard and defunding them from federal taxpayer money. Coming up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game, like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
A gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I mentioned that Scott Jennings will join us at 4:25 after Sue's News. I think I played this cut last week, and if I didn't, I'll encapsulate it here. He's on one of the CNN panels, and there's a rabbi with him. And if you would hear the audio or if you were to watch the clip, you would have thought the rabbi was the anti-Semite. It's kind of stunning. And that kind of brings us to Joanna Berkman, who's joining us this afternoon. She's an award-winning writer at large for Airmail. She writes for the Free Press. That's where I found this piece. And the headline of her piece that caught my attention a few days ago was, "Attacking Jews at Harvard doesn't just go unpunished, it gets rewarded." And some of this stuff is mind-blowing. I mean, we can talk about not sending taxpayer money to Harvard, but let's talk about the context of that and what's happened in particular related to October 7th, 2023. And Joanna is with us on the phone line this afternoon. Joanna, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Thank you so much for having me. A pleasure to be here.
It's such an important topic, and I want you to kind of sum up what you said at the beginning of this piece, because there were things that happened in the 2 weeks, certainly the first couple of weeks in the aftermath of the Hamas invasion, where we know how many people were killed and 250 people and more were kidnapped. But there was something that went viral that day, and you explained it extremely well in your piece. I'm going to have you do it for the audience here this afternoon.
Sure. You know, it happened just about, I think it was October 18th in 2023. So just in the days in the immediate aftermath of the attack, and there were protests all over the Harvard campus, pro-Palestine, even though the war, you know, Israel was just at that point about to really, pick up, the pieces from what had happened and to start to battle Hamas. And there were lots of protests at Harvard. Obama was coming to town to speak at Harvard, and many, many students started marching from Harvard College to the business school campus where Obama was slated to speak. And the business school had been a rather quiet place throughout all these protests in post-October 7th. And suddenly the campus was flooded with protesters, and they were doing what's called a die-in. The students were pretending to be dead, laying down in the grass, holding signs with slogans about complicity in Gaza. And this was the day after there had been a major explosion at a hospital in Gaza. And at first it had been the blame for it had been laid at Israel. Ultimately, it seemed that, in fact, it was the explosion of a bomb that had been aimed at Israel. People were very upset, and there was the leader of the protest was reading what was purportedly a firsthand account of someone who was at the hospital, kind of graphically describing the horrors that were in fact happening, people dying, children dying. All this was being read. A student who happened to be an Israeli American comes out of his campus apartment at Harvard Business School, getting ready to take a midterm exam that afternoon. And he starts walking through, and he's filming it. That was sort of a big issue in those early days.
Yep.
Who's filming who? Are people being doxxed? And he felt this was kind of happening pretty much on his front lawn, and he wanted to see what was happening and why. And, pretty quickly, students started coming over to him who were, at least some of them, were these kind of quote-unquote safety marshals. They don't have any official role on campus, but they wear these neon vests, and they feel that, their job is to get rid of counter-protesters. They say they're also there to protect the people lying down in the grass or protesting, and they start telling him, you can't be here, we're going to cover you, and the group starts to grow. And then they start kind of surrounding him with keffiyehs. They start telling him, exit, exit, get out of here. And he says, I have every right to be here. I live here. And you can hear in the video other people saying, let him go, let him go. He's a student. What are you doing? And the group gets bigger and bigger. And then, there's all kinds of sounds and scuffling, and it gets more and more tense. And then they start shouting, the group around him gets larger, and they start shouting, shame, shame. And then at the sort of crescendo of this, pretty frightening encounter, the 100 or so protesters lying on the lawn start joining in. So now there's over 100 people. There's the people, maybe 8 or so people, who are immediately on top of him, kind of blocking him and trying to force him in a direction he doesn't want to go, screaming shame in his face. And then everyone joins in. And then ultimately, he's kind of forced out of, this outside area. It's just the lawn, but he's kind of forced onto a path.
Right. So he's just trying to get ready for a midterm. The video, as you say, that goes viral. You can watch it. I'll link to your piece. I'm pretty sure that I might have put it up on Twitter last week. But here's the most shocking part of this, as you point out. Maybe it's not shocking anymore. Certainly should have been shocking. That these weren't just students. And one of the things that we were told in the media by the rest of the legacy media is that, this is outside agitators. These are people coming in from the outside. Now, we did have some of that stuff here with Ferguson when it happened, people trying to stir it up. But as you point out, the two aggressors who were easiest to identify were Harvard employees, Johanna.
Yes, yes. They were students who were also employees. Exactly. So these weren't just students, nor were they just employees. They were people who were both. One of them was a student at Harvard Law School. Both of them, by the way, graduated today. Today was Harvard commencement.
Interesting.
And one of them, the Harvard Law student, was a teaching fellow, meaning, you know, he's sort of an assistant to the Harvard Law School full professor who interacts with students, does study sessions, sends out materials, helps them review for exams, all that kind of thing. Some of them do have some grading authority, depends class to class. And the other one was a proctor, meaning that he was living in a freshman dorm advising freshman students.
So were there, what happened in the aftermath of that? Because it even took the president of Harvard a few weeks to even address any of this, and they issue a report. But was there ever any, graduation day, I guess not, ever any consequences?
Well, what they have told the attorney for the student who was mobbed, the Israeli-American, is we're not going to tell you. Discipline's finished. That's confidential. So the one visible repercussion was that weeks after this happened, you know, as you mentioned, right, the then president of Harvard, Claudine Gay, sends out an email called Combating Anti-Semitism, which went into great detail on a number of things. And then sort of way into this very long email, right towards the end, she mentions this incident. And just the very next day after she sends out the email, the student who was a freshman proctor moves out of his dorm. And as I understand, it was not by choice. And so he was no longer allowed to be a proctor. So that was the visible repercussion. But they, as you know, as I say in the piece, they in fact have been rewarded by Harvard in many ways.
Absolutely. And here's another aspect that I think I was unaware of. And, you know, I went to the University of Missouri. They have all these campuses have their own police departments and they deal. Sadly, I was arrested by the University of Missouri police 40 years ago. That's another story. But the Harvard Police Department is investigating this. And you have information in your piece that they didn't even cooperate with Suffolk County, Massachusetts, and the DA's office with trying to get justice here. That is even more mind-boggling to me. And what does that tell us? Does that tell us that the administration was putting pressure on the Harvard Police Department?
That is certainly what it looks like. You know, what I know that happened is that the commander of the Harvard Police Force told the Suffolk County DA's office, we're done. You want to charge them? Charge them. You don't want to charge them? Don't charge them. You want more cooperation from us? You have to subpoena us. And what's so odd about that, this was not the Boston police on, you know, sometimes that happens.
Yeah,
you
right.
Have a scenario where the city police is on a university campus, and that's inherently a fractious interchange, and this university's job is really to protect students, and the Boston police is an arm of the city. But this was the university's police department. It wasn't an outside force coming in. So it's extremely unusual. They were working together, except they really weren't. And I think, you know, there may come a time in the next year or so when exactly who told the Harvard police to stand down will be revealed. I don't think that that will come in the event of a civil lawsuit against Harvard over this incident. And if that were to go far enough, if that lawsuit were to file, I think there's a decent chance it will. And if that lawsuit were to proceed far enough along, I think there will be subpoenas. And I think then you will see police members who will be compelled to testify and reveal, you know, how far up did that come from? Did it come only from, you know, the top echelon of the police department, or was the administration directing the police department? So we don't know. But
that would be important to find out. Johanna Berkman is with us this afternoon. I want you to address the issue, and this is all well chronicled in the piece, and it's a detailed piece, and I will share it again this afternoon. But I want you to kind of explain who Ibrahim Barmal is in his involvement at Harvard, because this is another fascinating aspect, I think.
Yes, as I mentioned, he was a teaching fellow. He's also an editor of the Harvard Law Review, which is a pretty, you know, that's kind of for the academic elite in a given class. And just in the last few weeks, he was rewarded with a $65,000 fellowship. He is going back to work for a nonprofit that he had previously worked for one summer. It's called CARE. It's a nationwide nonprofit. It is the Council on American Islamic Relations. They do a lot of immigrant rights work. They're also essentially an anti-Israel lobbying group. That's a very large part of what they do. And so now he's basically, his work there will be funded by Harvard. And from what I understand, you know, there are multiple, as I understand it, Harvard Law faculty on the board of the Harvard Law Review. What I understand, not every faculty member on the board of the Law Review were involved in the voting, the mm-hmm. decision to award this public interest. So they basically give out public interest law fellowships. This was not something where the entire board was consulted. From what I understand, at least one faculty member was involved in making this decision. In addition, I think the Harvard Law Review is now under investigation by the Trump administration. The Trump administration alleges that the Law Review was choosing, in terms of their selection process for whose work to publish, that it was very much identity-based, that it was much harder, they allege, for a white male to get a piece published versus minorities, versus, you know, racial or gender.
Right. Well, and so, again, a lot of the details here, when you say things like that to some of us, are not exactly shocking. Now, you're more of a reporter here, but what are your thoughts? You mentioned the Trump administration, because Harvard seems to be really doubling down on some of the pushback here with Trump. A lot of us feel, hey, you do whatever you want at Harvard, right? But we don't want the tax dollars going, especially when you have a $53 billion endowment. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's a complicated question. One of the remarkable things is this battle. I think with this battle against Harvard, Trump has managed to do what I would have thought was unthinkable, which, you know, it's kind of turning Harvard with its $53 billion into a folk hero to some people. Because now, like, you know, whereas the university, a lot of the common thread was sort of the anti-Israel advocacy. Now there's a lot of anti-Trump, and
yeah,
that's kind of taking over and kind of unifying people. In fact, and at commencement today, you know, last year at commencement, Harvard President Alan Garber was booed roundly. This year, multiple standing ovations.
See, that's interesting, now, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And I think it's going to be a really, really tough battle. I think from what my sources are telling me and different pieces that I'm sort of looking at, I think there's a pretty good chance that over the long haul, and this could take years, that Harvard may, you know, there's a very good chance Harvard will prevail in the courts just because of the way things are being done. You know, is everything Trump's doing to cut funding or to go against them in terms of how many foreign students they have or whether they can even have foreign students at all, you know, is it being done in a legal, methodical way? Maybe not. And so maybe Harvard will prevail in a sense, right, in the courts. But that doesn't mean that they will in any way win the war. Because, of course, in addition to being able to go after the university with the courts, he has political capital. And right now, of course, right, there's this bill, the big, beautiful bill that just narrowly passed the House. It's now in the Senate. And what is one of the features of that bill? One of the features of that bill is to dramatically increase the tax on endowment for
right.
a university like
yeah.
Harvard. And, you know, they currently pay 1.4% a year tax on their endowment. That, it's important to note, was that came in Trump won. There was no tax before that. That Trump accomplished in his first term. And what they're now talking about, I think it's to increase it to about 21%. If that were to pass, that could be a humongous problem for the university. That could mean that they have to spend, let's say that were to happen, that could be $1 billion a year that they would owe. And that's just federal.
Yeah, right.
And one of the dangers when you do, if that were to come to pass, what if the city of Cambridge says, hey, wait a minute, why are you paying all this?
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's shifting goalposts kind of as he goes and changing the way people think about things like, oh, wait, we can tax endowments, or, hey, wait, we can reduce federal funding to universities. Like maybe the Trump administration will lose the ability to cut $2.2 billion as they've just done, right? Maybe Harvard will beat that back, but maybe the trend over time will be against having
yeah,
such
that's,
fast.
That's fascinating. Listen, this is a great conversation. I, on a daily basis, really, I think I do it on an hourly basis, highlight awful, awful journalism. But it's actually a pleasure to highlight really, really good journalism here that you did in the Free Press. So I really appreciate you coming on here this afternoon.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. A pleasure to talk to you.
I'm going to put that one on Twitter right now so the audience can read it. It's a great read. Thank you, Johanna. I appreciate it. We're coming back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery, though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
In just a moment. Can't remember the particulars, but there is something in the Big Beautiful Bill that incentivizes some of the trade schools, and I think that's very important. And
oh, that's
it's a
great
message that needs to be sent to a lot of these young men in particular. We have Sue's News on a Thursday edition coming up here just around the corner. Scott Jennings will join us at 4:25. Of course, he was just in for a baseball game that he saw with my friend Joe Arnold and I on Sunday, and the Cardinals keep winning, so they won another series in Baltimore. I wasn't even sure if they were going to get the game in because of the rain, but my goodness, the only bad news is the Cubs are damn good too.
Yeah,
and
are.
we have a 3-game deficit right now, but look, let's face it, many of us didn't expect to be in this position. Simple Minds is coming a week from tonight to the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater as the summer concert series out there sort of kicks off. We have a pair of tickets right now. We'll have one more pair tomorrow, I think, but if you're calling number 6, I just kind of picked that number randomly, 314-241-9797, 314-241-9797. There's some really interesting stuff happening in California with women's sports and with the trans issue, and Dwayne Patterson has written about it at hotair.com. He's going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. Also, we'll get into some of the audio in the interview. They're teasing this interview with Elon Musk that's going to be on CBS this Sunday morning, and he's leaving the Doge effort. He's going to focus on his businesses, but he's been a little critical of what's happened, and we'll get Bob Onder's thoughts on some of the Big Beautiful Bill and whether or not we're really going to see any results of the government shrinking. Joe Nocero is a guy that wrote at the Free Press, and he referenced a book that was written in 1980 called How Washington Really Works. And part of it is, you know, the sole focus of these government agencies is to ensure that their budgets never, ever shrink.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that's not the real world. So Elon was trying to bring us into the real world. I don't know if we quite got there, but at least the conversation's starting. Sue's News, just around the corner.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.